Alrighty.
The J-Talk Podcast.
Yosh, 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 yosh. Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. Sam, an abridged J1 match day with only six games across the weekend, but still plenty for us to sink our teeth into.
Yeah, there were a lot of good games, I thought, and it was a kind of nice way to ease back into it when we've got Champions League coming up and lots more fixtures midweek round. So, yeah, it was a nice way to settle in. And, yeah, as you said, some really good fixtures, especially, I thought, on Sunday.
Yes, yes. And, well, you'd expect an abridged episode of the podcast this week with only six games to review, but we're not counting our chickens. If there's any football podcast in the world that can bang on for 90 minutes about six games, then this is well and truly it. But we'll see how we go on this episode. Yeah, Sam's mentioned the ACL coming up, so we'll give that a brief mention off the top. I think, Sam, the long-awaited return of the, Eastern Zone of the ACL will get going this week. In fact, Nagoya Grampus are the first J1 team in action on Tuesday when they play JDT of Malaysia. So, what have we got to look forward to over the next week or so?
Yeah, well, I think two teams in Nagoya and Cerezo Osaka both have two games to play. They're at various different. They're in Thailand, both of those groups. So, yeah, JDT, as you say, for Nagoya, they've also got Pohang Steelers on Friday. Cerezo get their group underway on Thursday against Guangzhou, formerly Evergrande, and their under-22s or whatever they've sent out. And they also play Kitchi of Hong Kong on Sunday, and then over in Uzbekistan, some late night fixtures for Gamba Osaka and Kawasaki Frontale fans as Gamba start against Tampines Rovers of Singapore. I think it's an 11 p.m. kickoff for you over in Japan, and then even worse for Frontale supporters, kicking off at 1 a.m. Sunday morning against Daegu. So they've obviously not really considered East Asian football fans when deciding on these fixture times, but yeah, I mean, some good late night viewing at least.
Indeed, but any Frontale fans that tune into their first group stage game, as you say, Sam, against Daegu, will notice a very familiar name missing from the Frontale squad as Al Tanaka, who last week, of course, was an automatic selection to our J1 team of the half season, has not travelled to Uzbekistan with the Frontale squad as Sam, he's in negotiations apparently with a German team on a transfer, and I don't know, do you feel partly responsible for this, bigging up a Tanaka as much as you have over the last couple of seasons?
I'd like to think that the representatives of Fortuna Dusseldorf were listening and took my word as gospel, and yeah, I'm going to go with that. It's looking like an initial 1 year loan with them, then maybe an option to buy. I mean, it's one of those, a bit like the Keita Endo one where he went on an initial loan, and I don't think the clubs are going to get too much money for it. It's just my kind of biggest bugbear on all these transfers, and that Tanaka is a terrific player. He's shown that for the Olympic team. He's played for the national team. And yeah, as we have him as like an automatic pick in our J League 11, you'd expect them to get a little bit of money for it, but it's not really happening. But I'm happy for him that he's getting his move. There's been a lot of debate about, is the German second division the place for him? Could he play at a higher level? Should he have gone to a league like Portugal, like the Netherlands, something like that? But, I mean, just for me, I think it's a nice kind of safe step, I think. It's a well-trodden path into the two Bundesliga. Dusseldorf's, like, a lot of players have played there before. Sami's been there and others like that, and I think he should establish himself as a key player in that team at that level and do a bit like what Wataru Endo has done, where he made his name in Germany kind of in the second division and has gone on to be a very good player in the Bundesliga. So hopefully it works out well for him there. I mean, as an FC Tokyo supporter, you've seen a lot of players that have gone over to Europe. What as a supporter is it that you look for in these deals? Are you most interested on the player getting the right move and moving at the right time, or are you more thinking, well, what are FC Tokyo getting out of it, or have we got a good enough transfer fee? Yeah, what's kind of most important for you and maybe for other supporters?
It's a good question. Yeah, I think there is a general frustration amongst supporters when their players leave at the lack of An acceptable, if you like, a transfer fee, and that's certainly been the case for Tokyo. I think Yuto Nagatomo was basically the first of our latest wave to move, and there was, I don't know if we actually saw any money from his transfer until he'd actually left the first club he signed for in Italy, and before he moved to Inter Milan. So there is a part of that, but yeah, I mean, from a personal perspective, I always was just hoping they would go to a team I was familiar with and might have a chance to watch, because we want to obviously we want to see them develop. We don't want to stand in their way. We want them to develop their careers and to be able to not necessarily cheer them on, but yeah, to be able to watch them and see how they progress is also very important. So yeah, from a purely selfish point of view, I know it didn't work out for Yoshinori Muto, but I was excited to see him join Newcastle in the Premier League, because that was a chance for me to get to see him, well, albeit very, very sporadically. But an opportunity like that, I was happy to see him get, although he didn't obviously make the most of it and perhaps wasn't given enough of a chance. But it's kind of six of one, half a dozen of the other. You want your club to do well out of the transfer, but you also want the player to be able to develop and flourish. So, I agree with you on Tanaka that this is hopefully a good first step. He's still obviously young enough to for this to be a stepping stone to a bigger club. Again, with apologies to supporters of Fortuna Dusseldorf. But, I'm sure he'll make the most of it over there and do all Frontale supporters proud. Now, let me throw a question back to you, Sam. What does this mean for Frontale? They're obviously running away with the league again this season, but what does it mean for their title defence? We've seen them replace Hidemasa Morita with Joao Schmidt, of course, who was fitted in like he'd been playing for Frontale for the past 5 years. Do Frontale have a ready-made replacement for Ao Tanaka in their squad already, or do you fancy them to maybe do a spot of shopping in the summer transfer window?
I wouldn't rule out a bit of shopping, but it is time for the glorious return of Ryota Oshima, who is just about back in training at the perfect time to slot back in to that midfield. So, yeah, anyone, supporters of other teams thinking, okay, there might be a weakness in this Frontale team, and so, yeah, they see Oshima come back into that midfield, they might be a little bit disappointed. So I think initially this isn't going to be too big an ordeal. I mean, obviously, it's a massive player to lose, but Oshima, at his best, at when fully fit, is a terrific midfielder in his own right. So I don't think they'll drop off too significantly. But with Oshima, you can never tell how long he's going to be there before he picks up another injury. So I wouldn't be 100% surprised to see Kawasaki move into the transfer window, but I'd probably think they'll ride it out for the rest of this year and then maybe make a couple of moves in January.
All right, fair enough then. So Frontale over in Uzbekistan, of course, for the ACL. So the teams in third and fourth in the league, Yokohama, F. Marinos and Sagan Tosu, will be hoping to make up a little bit of ground in their games in hand, while Frontale and indeed Nagoya, currently in second, are away in that competition. We'll obviously be touching on the ACL results as they progress on each week's episode of the podcast. We do have a few Emperor's Cup games to round up from last midweek. On last week's podcast, we mentioned a couple of fairly significant cup sets, Sam, with Yokohama F. Marinos and FC Tokyo both shocked in the second round. And, Sanfrecce Hiroshima went and said, hold my beer, boys. we've got an even bigger, perhaps an even bigger shock for you. Last Wednesday when they hosted Okasias Kyoto of the Kansai Regional League. Don't worry, listeners, if you'd never heard of them, neither had I. But, the visitors rocked up, Sam, and promptly spanked Sanfrecce 5-1.
Yeah, absolutely incredible result. I mean, you can expect a couple of shocks in this, but a 5-1 home defeat to a team from the 5th Division, I mean, it's pretty incredible, as well as they might be going in that division. I think they're second at the moment. But, yeah, appalling from Hiroshima. It was branded pretty pathetic, I think, for most quarters, their performance. It was a rotated side, as most teams do in this competition to a degree, but there are still good players in that team. There was Douglas Vieira was playing up front. You've got Higashi's played a lot, Morishima off the bench, Asano off the bench, Shibasaki very experienced. There is no excuse for losing 5-1 to a regional team with the team that they put out, as rotated as it might have been. And yeah, it was, you could tell that Jofuku wasn't happy. Everyone who started in that game was then dropped for this weekend game. They weren't involved. So yeah, an appalling result, and to fans of Tokyo and Yokohama, F. Marinos might have been quite happy that Hiroshima are taking a bit more of the heat for their performance in the Euro and in the Emperor's Cup after their Yokohama and Tokyo's defeats the week before.
Yes, fair enough. So in other games with the J1 interests last Wednesday, there were very, very comfortable indeed wins for Kashima Antlers and Vissel Kobe. Gunma Osaka also won 3-1 over a university team. And the other game was somewhat of a cup set. Yokohama FC followed Sanfrecce out of the competition, joining FC Tokyo, Yokohama, F. Marinos and Vegalta Sendai of the J1 teams to fall in the second round. Yokohama FC lost 2-1 to Hachinohe of J3. So we mentioned last week that FC Tokyo had the lowest point in their history, losing to the students of Juntendo University, but then bouncing back to win 4-1 in their second leg of their Levain Cup playoff stage against Shonan Bellmare. And then, well, Hiroshima bounced back from their hugely disappointing midweek loss in the Emperor's Cup, Sam, by winning 1-0 at home over Kashiwa. Football, bloody hell, eh?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's just typical of the J-League and just football in general. But it was a completely different performance from Hiroshima. I thought they played very well. They're on the front foot. They're back in their favour, 3-6-1 sort of formation, which they're a lot more comfortable in. They looked like the only team in this game that was really pressing forward. Junior Santos set the kind of the mark in the first minute with an incredible effort off the underside of the crossbar. And just generally, Hiroshima were the only team that looked like scoring in this game. They got a little bit fortunate, but, well, quite fortunate with the goal they scored with the deflected cross. But yeah, Kashiwa offered very little. They're a team completely devoid of confidence. They now third bottom. They just, I've said for a while, Gamba and Kashiwa, they seem too good to go down. But all my thoughts on Kashiwa in the recent weeks, I mean, I'm just saying, yeah, it is a possibility yet again for Raisol to go down, despite the talent in their squad, which might be diminished in the next couple of days. But yeah, they should be doing so much better. But yeah, it was another abject performance from them. But credit to Hiroshima for bouncing back in the way they did.
Indeed, and also a credit, I think, is due, Sam, to the Kashiwa keeper, Masato Sasaki, who filled the breach with Kim Sung-gyu and not available. And yes, Sasaki on his full J1 debut, well, he did superbly until, yeah, he basically had no chance at all with the Hiroshima winner 12 minutes from time. I don't know, Sasaki, is he the next goalkeeper off the Raisol production line, a la Kosuke Nakamura?
Well, he could well be. I mean, he's performed pretty well in the few games he's got in the Levain Cup this season. And, I mean, he didn't put a foot wrong in this. He made a lot of terrific saves. I thought his positioning was good. There wasn't a time when he was caught out trying to be too clever with his passing out from the back. And I thought he looked a very capable goalkeeper. And, I mean, Kim Sung-gyu, I think, has suffered, his performances have suffered with Nakamura leaving, in that he got really comfortable, I thought, in his role, and he was making mistakes, but they didn't really think there was anyone behind him that was going to take his position. So with Sasaki coming in, and he's going to have a couple of games now with Kim in isolation after coming back from Korea, where he can really establish himself. And we've seen a lot of teams so far this season and last season that have brought in young goalkeepers, and if they've performed, they've kept them in the side. So yeah, he didn't do his chances any harm. And I think if this is a positive for Kashiwa, where there aren't many positives, that some sort of competition for Kim could only improve Kim as well. So I think, yeah, this was a really positive performance for Sasaki in the midst of quite a bleak performance otherwise.
Yes, indeed. Well, I haven't heard from Scott McIntyre yet to find out if he's got a new boyfriend or not in the form of Sasaki, but on this display, I wouldn't be surprised. Yes, Sasaki did superbly to keep out a close-range effort from Yoshifumi Kashiwa and then a long-range drive from Tsukasa Morishima in the first half. But as we mentioned, yeah, unfortunately for Sasaki, had no chance on what turned out to be the winner 12 minutes from time when his namesake, the Hiroshima defender Sho Sasaki, crossed from the left with the ball deflecting off Kayashi Hashi and flashing into the net past Sasaki, who was, obviously helpless. This is obviously the J-League's own goal rule striking again. Anywhere else in the world, that's a Shihashi own goal, but Sasaki was credited with it. And, so Hiroshima bouncing back, as we've said, from that humiliating loss in midweek to actually, move up in the J1 table, Sam, and all the way up to sixth. Well, you mentioned how abject a performance it was for Reysol, Sasaki aside. A notable absentee for Reysol on the weekend was Ataru Esaka, who, of course, has been their main creative spark and their main route to goal, with Michael Olunga no longer at Hitachi Dai. But, just to make things worse for Reysol supporters, Sam, after such a poor performance, there are strong rumours today linking Esaka with a move to Urawa Reds in the summer.
Yeah, that'd be very devastating for Kashiwa. I think, generally speaking, he is their most creative player. He's often their best player. We've spoken about him a number of times on this podcast and what he brings to Kashiwa. And, yeah, for him to leave, it would be an absolute nightmare for them because, yeah, losing Olunga, their best player and goal scorer, and then to add that to the most creative player and the next best player at that club, I mean, it would be, yeah, horrendous for them. And, I don't know where they've... I don't know how much money they're going to get for him, but I don't imagine it's going to be much to go out and splash and try and improve the side. So, yeah, really unfortunate for Kashiwa if that does happen. Interesting move going to Reds because he plays in the exact same position as Yoshio Koizumi, who's had such a good season. So it'd be an interesting puzzle for Ricardo Rodriguez to kind of fit both of them in. I've seen kind of predicted formations of how they might go, and with a three at the back system with Hiroki Sakai at right centre back, and then two attacking midfielders behind Junker in Osaka and Koizumi. And I mean, if they can get those three working together, I mean, that is an incredibly potent triangle at the up front for Red. So that's really exciting for them, but devastating for Kashiwa in the relegation zone, about to lose their best player again. I mean, yeah, it's not. I can't really paint a pretty picture for Reysol at the moment.
Well, yes, and they'd obviously had the pain of seeing their old boy Hiroki Sakai move to Reds in the international break, as you've just mentioned, Sam. Hiroki Sakai returning from Europe after a long stint over in Germany and France. If there was anywhere else in between, then I apologise. I must have been sleepwalking through that. But, most recently, I think Sakai was with Marseille and his national teammate Nagatomo. So, yeah, to come back, I don't know, Sam, is he still at the height of his powers, would you say? This is hardly a retirement tour, is he? He's still a regular in the national team. He's still obviously been entrusted, as is almost certainly going to be the case, with one of the overage spots in the Olympic squad. So he still obviously has a lot to offer. And returning to Reds, and as you say, will be able to add quite a lot to their squad and perhaps provide them with the flexibility they might have lacked. So, I was wondering where he and Daigo Nishi might fit in. But, yeah, if he's going to be playing as part of a back three, then that would obviously free Nishi up if there's a space for Nishi further forward. All in all, it sounds like a fairly intriguing transfer, although, as we say, another painful blow for Reysol supporters.
Yeah, just look away, Reysol fans. But, yeah, I think it's still an incredibly good signing for Reds. Sakai maybe is not quite at the height of his powers in terms of gallivanting forward and the kind of the pace and the energy he brought to that right side. He has done for Japan for so many years. And kind of at Marseille, he's been changing his position up a little bit. He's played over at the left-hand side. He's played at the right of a back three as well. So they're bringing maybe a more versatile version of Hiroki Sakai than maybe we're used to watching Japanese football. So yeah, I think it's a really interesting signing. I think it should work quite nicely if they do go to that back three and he plays on that right side, as long as he's still given a little bit of license to go forward, because, I mean, he's still very good doing that. And if you play Nishi just outside of him, and you can even swap those two about, and I think that could be a really nice fluid system that they play if that is the way they go. But just having someone of his experience, his leadership, I think it's a perfect signing for him. I mean, he's only 31. I mean, he's got, what, 10 years left of him in the J-League? I mean, yeah, I think it's a no-brainer of a signing, and it just automatically boosts everyone at Reds, and it's a signing of real, real quality.
All right, then. Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see how he fits in. I'm not sure whether he'll actually be joining up with the squad and making any appearances before the Olympics, but, yeah, we'll wait and see how fit he is and whether he's ready to go, and Ricardo Rodriguez will throw him straight in or not. That will be, all will be revealed in the next few match days, I presume. And, well, speaking of Reds, we might as well talk about their game on Sunday now then, Sam. They hosted Shonan Bellmare, and for the first hour or so of this game, it was yet another Kasper Juncker masterclass. I mentioned I hadn't heard from Scott McIntyre about Kashiwa's new keeper, but I certainly heard from him about Juncker not making our team of the half season, Sam, even though I have to take full responsibility. He was on your four-man shortlist for the striker position. But, I decreed that he hadn't played enough games to qualify. But on this form, he is almost certainly going to qualify for the shortlist for the full season team of the year, despite missing most of the first half of the year. Obviously, the first goal in the ninth minute was a bit of a gift, as the three Shonan defenders failed to clear a low cross into the box, and Juncker was Johnny on the spot to fire home from close range. But his second goal was an absolute masterpiece, and I wasn't sure he had in him. I wasn't sure he was that quick, but the way he covered the ground and then to show the composure that he did was absolutely remarkable 8 minutes into the second half.
Yeah, he's an incredible footballer, and he's penned into my team of the season already. I'm not going to take any arguments on it. I don't think he's got to be there. He's just an incredible striker. I mean, his ability just in that channel between width of the 18-yard box, there's not many players better, well, definitely not in this league. I mean, yeah, his finishing is absolutely perfect. Like the first goal is just a kind of instinctive reaction, but he puts it into the bottom corner. And then the second one, yeah, the terrific breakaway, the composure as he gets there, the exquisite finish. I mean, yeah, terrific goal. And I mean, he's got that understanding already with Koizumi. It was a perfect through pass to him for that goal. And yeah, he just looks a threat every time he's in and around the penalty area. He hit the post a bit later on with another good effort across the goalkeeper. I think it's 10 goals in 10 games in all competitions for him. He's just taken the league by storm. He's an exceptional striker. And I'm looking at him as I'm thinking, I'm watching the Danish team at the Euros as well. I'm thinking, is he really not good enough to get into that Danish team? Because he's just an absolute natural finisher. And Reds, to have plucked him out, have done absolutely incredibly. And I love watching him. He's just a perfect, perfect striker.
Yeah, stunning piece of business from Reds to get Juncker, and he's to say he's hit the ground running is obviously a massive understatement. So yeah, he did give Reds a ninth minute lead, but just before the half hour, ex-Reds man Naoki Yamada equalised with a first time shot that deflected in off Tomoaki Makino. That all came about after Reds were caught playing the ball around very loosely out of defence, and indeed it was ex-Shonan player Daiki Kaneko whose poor pass was easily cut out, and the ball ended up with Yamada, who smashed in. Then came Juncker's stunning second, as I say, 8 minutes into the second half. A beautiful through ball from Koizumi into his path. But yeah, the fact that Juncker had run full pelt for basically 40 yards, but then had the composure and touch to chip Corsitani from 25 yards. It was, simply stunning. And, an absolute masterpiece, as we've said. And as Sam's mentioned, he hit the post about 10 minutes later. And indeed, Tani kept Shaunan in the game with a remarkable triple save shortly after that, saving from Tomoaki Okubo. And then a couple of close range Juncker rockets from the rebound of Okubo's initial shot, Tani was able to keep out. And that kept Belmare in it. And to that point, Sam, they definitely ridden their luck, but they kept on going, and another frustrating result for Reds at the end of the day. But Shaunan deserve a huge amount of credit, don't they, for keeping on going, with Wellington equalising in the 70th minute with a glancing header, and then their captain Takuya Okamoto on as a substitute in this game, lashing in at the near post.
Yeah, well, I was pretty convinced it was going to be disallowed for some reason, because they usually do against Okamoto. But yeah, full credit to Shaunan. It's kind of been the story of their season. They just do not give up, and they always kind of battle, and generally they get results. I mean, a lot of draws this season. This time they've managed to turn one into a victory, and yeah, full credit to them. It was a little bit like Reds, with all the brilliance that they have going forward with Juncker and Koizumi, there are still issues at the back, which they are addressing. Sakai obviously coming in. They've also got Alexander Schultz, another Danish player, coming in from Michelin to centre-back, so he should come in and maybe solidify that a little bit more, because they were guilty of overplaying, as you said, for the first goal. I think Suzuki is partially at fault for Wellington's goal, but Makino also there. He's the experienced defender, and he just ducks out of the challenge with Wellington. He doesn't go for it. Now, obviously, Wellington is most likely to win aerial duels, but you've got to go up with him, try and make it a little bit difficult, but he doesn't do that. And then for the last goal, they're caught out all over the place, where I think there's an initial phase of play where Machino makes the run, and he gets himself pulled over towards Akimoto. And as they're resetting, Makino looks across, and he should see that Akimoto is a winger, really, and he's not going to deal with crosses into the box well at any point anyway. But he's got two players on him, Okamoto and Machino, and he just passes Machino onto him, and instead of coming across, dealing with it himself, and then dragging Iwanami across. So it leaves poor Akimoto completely outnumbered at the back post. He does what he can to head it away. But yeah, just falls straight to Okamoto, and there's nothing Akimoto can then do to recover, and it's a good finish. There was a player right by the goalkeeper in an offside position, so that's why I thought, oh, maybe they're looking at that. But thankfully, for Okamoto at least, VAR didn't think he was interfering with play, which he wasn't. Yeah, and the goal was allowed to stand, and Shaunan and Okamoto finally had something to celebrate.
Yes, he's had a really rough go of it, hasn't he, with VAR this season. Okamoto seemingly picked on more than any other player. But as you say, for all Belmare fans, are very relieved to see a goal of his stand. And ultimately, another famous win for Shaunan. Juncker's heroics aside, yes, Belmare winning 3-2 at Saitama Stadium. And if that sounds familiar, a familiar scoreline, well, listeners, yes, that is indeed the same scoreline as from the famous ghost goal game from 2 years ago. Of course, you might remember seeing the highlight when Daiki Sugioka's shot hit one post and went into the net off the other, but bounced straight out of the net into the goalkeeper Shusaku Nishikawa's hands, who flung the ball back towards the centre circle in disgust, not realising that the referee hadn't awarded the goal and hadn't seen the ball actually hit the net. And despite that, and going 2-0 down, I think, in that game, Shaunan went on to win and claim the first of their recent famous victories at Saitama Stadium. Of course, that's a happy hunting ground for them. They won the Louvain Cup there a couple of seasons ago, didn't they, Sam? And I did have a quick quiz question for you without notice. You might know this, but in that famous ghost goal game from 2 years ago, Sam, do you remember who scored the winner for Shaunan?
Is it going to be Okamoto?
Good guess. And that's probably where you thought I was going with the question, but it wasn't.
No, I can't remember it.
Okay, well, the listen.
And that was a Friday night.
Yeah, it was indeed. The listeners might know. If you don't, it's now Kawasaki favourite Miki Yamane, who scored a deflected winner late on. So yeah, actually watched the YouTube highlights of that game again today, just to refresh myself on the ghost goal, and it's still as unbelievable now as it was back then. And Yamane obviously doing a lot in his short time with Shonan to gain the attention of Kawasaki, where he has flourished, of course. So this result for Shonan saw them move above Tokushima in the table and up to 13th, now 7 points outside the bottom four, while Reds were overtaken by Hiroshima. And yes, they started the match day 7th, and they actually dropped two spots as Antlers moved above them as well after their draw that we're coming on to shortly. Kasper Juncker, great performance, mate, but unfortunately it was all for naught as Belmare triumph at Saitama Stadium. All right, next to Sam's pick of the weekend, and listeners, especially Fukuoka and Kobe fans who thought we might have been leading the podcast with that game this week. It was, of course, the best-looking game on paper, but yes, in the green room, we decided to lead with the first two games that we've covered as they led into our intro, if you like. So we will now talk about the game of the game of the round and Sam's pick of the weekend. Sam, it was looking like it was going to be another 1-1 in these games that you've picked after a very eventful first half, but the second half, not a great deal happened until about 15 minutes from time when Kobe were awarded a penalty. But there was plenty to chat about in the first half, no question.
Yeah, it was a really exciting first half. And then, as you say, at halftime, it seemed like both teams got together and thought, yeah, we'll keep it at 1-1. That's the way this should be going. And very little happened for most of the second half. But yeah, first half, it was end-to-end. It was an interesting kind of clash of styles with the Vispa a bit more direct. Playing for set pieces, going long. And yeah, Kobe just trying to do their usual kind of short passing and whatnot. But they were a little bit quicker. It was a bit of a Vispa-like goal for Kobe right at the start of the game, with Sakai getting it out on the right side and putting in a Salomonson type ball in for Furuhashi, who got in there and just chested it over the line. And that kind of sparked the Vispa into life, and they went for it, and yeah, they created a few chances. They got fortunate with their goal, where there's a kind of Jordy Crew left-footed cross where Yamagishi goes for it. He might touch it, he might not, and Maikawa can't react, so it nestles into the bottom corner. And then for the rest of that first half, yeah, end-to-end, both teams had chances, and it looked a really exciting game. And yeah, I just don't know what happened in the second half, and it was a good job we got a bit of some would say a debatable penalty. I think it's a correct decision, but that kind of then sparked the game back into life.
Yes, it's one of those where it's obviously really harsh on the player, but Taro Sugimoto, I think quite tellingly, didn't really protest the decision at all, did he? I mean, some of his Fukuoka teammates went to the referee to air their grievances with the decision, but yes, tellingly, yes, Sugimoto was not one of them, and he had his arm raised when Gotoku Sakai crossed from the byline, and obviously after a short VAR review, the referee's initial decision was confirmed. I agree with you, Samuel. I think it's the right decision, unfortunately, for Sugimoto and Vispa, with Andres Iniesta sending Masaaki Murakami the wrong way from the spot to put Kobe ahead with 10 minutes to go. But then, as you say, things are really heated up again, almost straight away from the restart, when up the other end, Sugimoto thought he'd won a penalty. Obviously still, hot under the collar after, giving away a penalty. That's clumsy from Hotaru Yamaguchi running in behind him. But I don't know, for me, I think Sugimoto's run across Yamaguchi to initiate the contact, indeed, if there was much contact at all. You'd expect Sugimoto to go down in that situation, and obviously you've seen those given, but ultimately I don't think he can have too many complaints about the referee's decision to not award a penalty there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it is just Sugimoto. He does well to nick in front, and yeah, he's looking for a kind of a dangle of a leg, but I think Yamaguchi just kind of stands his ground, and Sugimoto kind of runs across him and into him to initiate the contact. So I think they got the decision right, the referee. On the field, he gave no penalty, and there was a quick VAR review again, and yeah, they decided that he'd made the right decision. I think I agree with him as well. I can see the frustration from Fukuoka fans because there is contact in the area, and you might say, well, maybe Yamaguchi should have got out of the way, and there is contact, but yeah, I think the right decision was made. And yeah, unfortunate maybe for Avispa, but yeah, I think the referee got the decision correct.
And then, yeah, so a flurry of late chances, including with the very last action of the game when Daya Maekawa for some reason chased a long ball, well, into the box, to the edge of the box, and decided to dash right out to the edge of the box and completely missed the ball. And then Wanma heading the loose ball, but not really able to get much contact on it, Sam. And then, yeah, Kobe clearing the ball off the line was the final act of the game. So ultimately, for Fukuoka, it's, not going to push any panic buttons here, but after hitting the heights they did of their very lengthy unbeaten run, they've now not won in three, including against Yokohama FC and Oita before this game against a fellow top half opponent. So I don't know, is this just an evening out of results for them? They might have some of the earlier results might have flattered them slightly, perhaps where they rode their luck and nicked a game at the end, and maybe this is just natural, not regression, but I guess an evening out of things. So what do you think about their recent form?
Yeah, I think it is a bit of an evening out, because the way that they play, with the limited possession, they rely on key moments from set pieces and whatnot. You can only do that so many times, and you can only nick certain number of results before the luck kind of goes the other way against you. I wasn't too concerned with their performance in this game. I thought it was a fairly even one. It wasn't like Kobe dominated or anything like that. So I wouldn't be too disheartened by it. The results against Yokohama FC, I thought, and Oita in the before the recent international break, they were more concerning to me. But yeah, I think it is a case where Avispa, as we've mentioned before, they got to such heights and they got to the outside the ACL places, but they looked to be in a position where they're pretty safe. Their objective this season was to stay out of the relegation zone. But for an absolute catastrophe for the remainder of the season, I think they're pretty much safe, and I think they know they're safe. So maybe there wasn't quite the intensity to get back into it, and maybe there's not quite the desire that might have been there earlier in the season. But yeah, I just think this was a game where a fine margin, you could see the penalty going the other way. They could have got a draw out of it, but they were beaten by a team that is a better team. So I wouldn't take too much from it if I was an Avispa fan. They go to Reds again in midweek, which is they've obviously beaten them earlier in the season. It's a tough game, though, against Saitama, but hopefully they can put in a similar or better performance in that one, try and get themselves back into it, because their fixtures, they're looking at them, they're quite difficult now. With Reds, they go to Sagantoso away, they've got Yokohama of Marinos away, then they play Gamba Osaka, who should be fighting for their lives at that point. So yeah, if they go on a run of their not winning in five or six, and they start to drop into the bottom half of the table, then it might be time to have some concern. But at the moment, I think they're just settling a little bit and not necessarily looking any higher in the table.
Yeah, fair enough. So for Kobe, then, they took Avispa's spot in the table, moving up one place to fifth, while Fukuoka slid behind Hiroshima and down to seventh. So, I mean, you never know what you're going to get with Kobe, do you? They're so inconsistent and so up and down. They'd obviously had a good result in the Emperor's Cup in midweek, again, with a much changed side. Is there any hint that they're building some decent momentum here? We're three unbeaten in the league, and as we say, fifth, 3 points behind third-placed F. Marinos, who do, to be fair, have a couple of games in hand on them. But I don't know. Are they the kind of the best of the rest behind the current top four, and the most likely to break through at this stage, do you think? I mean, it's easy to say yes after they've just won on the weekend, I appreciate. But, do you see them putting together some kind of a decent run of consistent form that could push them up the table even further?
I mean, it's so difficult with Kobe, because if you look at the names in that squad, you go, of course they are. They're a terrific set of players. But this game, yeah, they won, but I didn't think they looked particularly great. They didn't create too much. There was that period. And I mean, it's 1-1 against Avispa, as well as they're doing. I don't mean any disrespect to Avispa, but it is a team that Kobe would be expecting to beat and be expecting to, yeah, kind of dominate against. And for that period at the start of the second half where it was 1-1, and Kobe didn't have any real urgency to go forward, and it's just the way that they've been. They've got very good players, but they lack that intensity a little bit. They kind of seem to lack the desire to really challenge at the top level of the table. So while the players are there and they're kind of performing pretty well, they're fairly well for them, I just don't see them as a real threat, I would say, to the top four. Maybe they are the best team there. They're a little bit more consistent than Kashima have been and Urawa. But I mean, Tosu are playing better football, I think, than Kobe. But all the parts are there. It's just someone needs to find a spark to ignite this Kobe team. When they do, then maybe they're a title contender. But at the moment, they just seem kind of happy to kind of coast their way through games with the like kind of minimal effort, which is, yeah, it's not exciting enough from Kobe. And I think they should be doing a lot more again.
All right, well, we'll wait and see how Kobe fare in the next couple of match days. We're halfway through the weekend's six games, so that seems a reasonable enough point to take a quick break. So after a quick hit of music, we'll be back to round up the remaining three games. Welcome back, and we'll resume our review of J1 Match Day 18 with the only draw of the six games across the weekend. On Sunday at the Kashima Soccer Stadium, Antlers hosted Vegelta Sendai, and with Vegelta number one, Jakub Slovic, out injured, perhaps his pride was hurt, Sam, from just missing out on the goalkeeper spot in our J1 team of the half season last week. There was a full J1 debut for Serbian keeper Nedeljko Stojicic. Another good test of my pronunciation skills there. But his opposite number, Yuya Oki, was called into action in just the first minute, moving well to his right to keep out Takuma Nishimura's header. Stojicic's first big save came in the 26th minute when he got his fingertips to Keigo Tsunemoto's first-time rasper. Then up the other end, Oki produced a stunning reflex save to tip over from Nishimura before Ayase Wada headed against the bar in first half stoppage time, much to Stojicic's relief. So it was, interesting for me to see Stojicic get the nod, Sam. I know that Yuma Obato had played for Sendai in the Emperor's Cup in midweek, so I was surprised to see Stojicic get the nod, but he certainly justified his selection throughout the game, well, at least until that that horrible finish that he'll be having nightmares about for weeks to come, I'm sure.
Yeah, he will be, because, yeah, as you say, he had a terrific game. He's only really played once before for Sendai. He played one Levain Cup tie, and he got a clean sheet against Hiroshima in that one and played fairly well. But, yeah, he was making some terrific saves in this one, as was Oki. And it was just a kind of a case of two goalkeepers playing really well and then sort of at fault for the goals, I thought. Stojicic with the one that, right at the end where there's a cross that comes in and he's anticipating a touch coming and he waits too long and the ball goes past him when there's no touch there. So I felt for him there, because those are always like horrible ones for goalkeepers to concede, where a cross just sails all the way through and you've got to think, oh, I should have done something about it. But you can understand why he was trying to anticipate a touch. And Oki, I mean, he made some incredible saves in this one, as you mentioned. The one that he came off of Nishimura's shoulder just in front of him and he tips it over. But then the Sendai goal through Nishimura, I mean, it's terrible defending from Inokai, where the ball is just hoofed up and under by Appiah, and Inokai lets it bounce. Nishimura steals in, and Oki is maybe slightly slow off his line, and Nishimura beats him to it and tucks it in. So both goalkeepers will have, you'd say, a few regrets from the game, even though, generally speaking, their performances were very good. And I thought this game was a terrific one, really. There were chances for both sides. Like, Sendai weren't overawed playing against Kashima. They gave as good as they got. I thought Nishimura maybe 2 months ago, I think I said he was playing very poorly and didn't look like a player who'd gone off to play in Europe at CSKA Moscow. But since then, he has just turned it up completely, and he played very, very well in this game. A constant nuisance, a constant threat up front for Sendai. And yes, Sendai again played very well, and they continue their little push out of the relegation zone. They'll be very upset to have conceded late on, and they could have been up in 15th after that. But yeah, they got a point, and that point for them against Kashima is a very good positive result, and it was another positive performance.
Yes, indeed, and a sneaky good pick by Johnny Nicol on last week's podcast, Sam. Yeah, obviously with you you taking dibs on Fukuoka versus Kobe as your pick of the weekend, Johnny went for this game as his, and I guess the curse of the pick of the weekend selector returned with it ending 1-1. But yes, this game certainly had plenty of incident, and as you say, some terrific goalkeeping until each of them made a pretty poor mistake. But yeah, certainly for the Sendai goal, Nishimura deserves a huge amount of credit. But yes, Inukai has had an absolute nightmare there, and well, Juan Alano's chipped cross in from an angle in the 97th minute, should say the 7th minute of a supposed 5 in a second half stoppage time, so Sendai were slightly aggrieved at that. But Sam, you were mentioning in the green room that the referee was well within his rights to add on some more time after substitutions and an injury. So if they're complaining up in Sendai, well, fair dues. But it sounds like the referee was right to add on that extra time. And unfortunately, as we say for Stojicic, he just watched in horror ultimately as Alano's ball drifted across the box, bounced in front of him, and then curled in at his far post, as Sam says, with him expecting somebody to steal in and try and get a touch on the ball. Instead, it just sailed straight across him and in for a last-ditch equaliser for Antlers. So the only, yes, as we say, the only draw of the match day, but one that had plenty of talking points and some excellent football in it. Okay, so that leaves us with two more games to go. Up at Atsubetsu on a Saturday afternoon, a Sapporo hosted Oita, and this game was put to bed pretty much inside the first 20 minutes, or should I say the first 21 minutes, Sam, with Takuro Kaneko netting a pretty handy brace to ultimately finish off a very disappointing Oita Trinita side.
Oh, Oita were dreadful. I mean, this is the worst performance of any team in this round. Very comfortably, they did not get going. They decided not to play a striker. And if I'm calling for Shun Nagasawa to come off the bench, you know they're playing poorly. And it was just horrendous. I think Keita Inoue was playing up there. He's a midfielder by trade. They had no outball. And Sapporo were absolutely dominant from the first minute to the 45th at least. And for much of the second half as well. I thought they played very well. Chanatip was back from injury. He controlled things. He was involved in everything good about them. The first goal, I think Kaneko makes a very good run. But the ball from my man Fukumori over the top is a glorious one. And Kaneko takes it down, a good finish as well, and then just from then on they were just completely in control. I thought, yeah, this is probably as good as I've seen Sapporo play in a while. And you know, I've just criticised Oita for not playing a striker. Well, Sapporo weren't either. They were playing Arano up front, but it made them so fluid in the way they were going. The Chanatip, Kaneko and Arano just, they switched their positions. They caused so many issues for that Oita back line, and just, yeah, they showed how to play with the kind of false nine, as it would be. Oita decided just to not really have any sort of focal point at all, and they just couldn't get out. And it wasn't until very late on, when they brought Nagasawa on, they brought Watanabe on, that they looked like a bit of a threat, and they had a couple of chances. They hit the crossbar with Nagasawa with the best effort of the game, but yeah, it took them so long to actually lay a glove on Sapporo, and Sapporo just, yeah, kind of swatted them aside with ease.
Yeah, an indication of obviously what Sapporo are capable of. I mean, we're well and truly aware of that, aren't we, Sam? But they just have not been able to string a consistent run of form together basically for the last 2.5 years. So the fact that they're 4 unbeaten now with 3 of those games wins, and they've ever so slightly edged back into the top half of the table in 10th, with themselves and FC Tokyo both moving above Cerezo Osaka over the course of the weekend. Who knows, will this be a springboard to a proper run of form that could see them challenge the top 6? Well, at the moment they're only 4 points behind sixth place Hiroshima, having played 3 games fewer than Sanfrecce. So you never know, but at least on this day, Sapporo well worthy of the 3 points, and for Oita, well, this is it's starting to look very, very grim indeed for them, even though they're just 3 points from safety. But more performances like this, and it's going to be a long, hot summer for Trinita. So were you going to jump in then, or sorry?
Yeah, just a bit of transfer is actually on Sapporo that I forgot to mention earlier. And saving my hat as well, as Anderson Lopez looks to be leaving Sapporo for Wuhan over in China. So very happy for me that I don't have to consume any hat. And I think it's the second season in a row that they're going to lose their top scorer in the middle of the season. And it didn't work out for them last year with Suzuki. So it's an interesting one for Sapporo, how they go about trying to replace him, if they do indeed, because they look very good without the striker today. But I think they've done very well to get rid of him. They're selling him at the highest possible value he could have, because I'm not sure Wuhan scouts have looked at all the goals in detail, because if they had, I don't think they'd be signing him. But I'm happy for him that he's managed to get his move, and I'm sure a nice payday at Wuhan. But it's interesting for Sapporo that they just keep losing what would be key players in their squad, and that is kind of the reason that they generally seem to be falling down the table just year on year. So I'd like to see them try and stop that and to try and keep some players and look to build, but maybe it's an offer they couldn't have refused.
Fair enough. I did notice that he was absent from the squad, and that's obviously the reason why. So, Anderson Lopez leaves as the joint top scorer in J1, which I guess makes headlines if you're a scout for Wuhan. So, if he indeed does finalise the move, then, good luck, Anderson. We'll always have the moat jump, won't we, Sam? And that was always, always something to remember him by. And, absolutely tremendous. And, Mini has scored quite a few goals for Sapporo, and a good record there. So I'm sure he, Sapporo supporters would be frustrated, as you say, Sam, to lose another of their top strikers. There's not a lot they can do about it, as you say, if the player is set for a big payday. All right, that leaves us with just one game to go from the weekend then, listeners. And, in many respects, we are saving the worst for last. Yokohama FC, the bottom club, hosted FC Tokyo at Mitsuzawa on Saturday. And, ultimately, Sam, FC Tokyo have won this game 1-0, thanks to an Adailton goal just past the half hour, with Tokyo's all tridente of Brazilian attackers combining to a devastating effect. It was one of the few highlights of a game that was played in a steady rain, and it was hardly the easiest game on the eye, was it?
No, not really. I think I may have blanked out for a lot of this game live. I remember Kleber, in the 8th minute, I think there was a punch out, and Kleber went for an over a kick, which he aimed towards the touchline instead of the goal. And I think I might have mentally checked out at that point, because I don't really remember a great deal of the rest of the game. But yeah, it's good for a Tokyo perspective that you've got Leandro back in the side, and the link up with Diego and Adailton, it can work very well. Higashi still made his way into the team, and he was robbed, I think, on halfway, that set up quite a few Yokohama chances that they did have in this game. It wasn't like one-way traffic at all for Tokyo. Yokohama were in the game, but just kind of lacked any sort of clinical edge. But there was the interesting thing that, again, I missed watching it live, so I thought it kind of confirms that I might have blacked out with this, but there was some kind of VAR controversy early in the second half.
Yes, well, it's been a while, so we might as well play the jingle. This week in VAR. Yes, welcome back to This Week in VAR. It's been several episodes, so we might as well give it a crack. Yes, in the 56th minute, as Sam mentioned, Keigo Higashi dawdled on the ball in midfield, as he is wont to do, and was dispossessed by Eijiro Takeda, who burst forward and shot from the edge of the box. The ball cannoned off Go Hatano's left-hand post and ended up at the edge of the box with Ryo Germain, who shot from the edge of the area. Higashi had gotten back to cover and flung himself to block or attempt to block Germain's shot. The ball deflected off him and flew over the bar, and much to his bemusement and of all the Tokyo players, the referee pointed to the spot and said that Higashi had blocked the ball with his hand. Yeah, as I say, the Tokyo players were stunned at this decision, with replays clearly showing that the ball had come off Higashi's leg. And ultimately, VAR has come to Tokyo's rescue, Sam. But again, as you've mentioned so many times throughout this season so far, the fact that it took roughly 4 minutes for a perfectly obvious refereeing mistake to be overturned was simply flummoxing to me. I mean, I accept the fact that on the first replay we saw on the DAZN telecast, that was inconclusive. But when they went to, in inverted commas, the right angle, you could clearly see that the ball was nowhere near Higashi's arm or hand, either his right hand or his left hand. And, that the ball had hit his leg. And the fact that it took VAR at least 2 minutes to instruct the referee to go over and look at the monitor, and then for the referee to take at least 7 or 8 replays himself before reversing his decision was just yet another example of why we've been so frustrated with the way VAR has been implemented here. I mean, ultimately, the correct decision was made, and as an FC Tokyo supporter, I'm grateful for that. But again, the total... I can't think of the right word. Just the amount of time it takes is just completely unacceptable.
Yeah, it was a ridiculous thing. And if they just sit on, oh yeah, we got the right decision, I think that's the bare minimum you expect from VAR, is for the right decision to be made. And I just can't see any excuse for this to take any longer than 10 seconds. The video referee should be able to look at it, say, yeah, ref, this has clearly hit his leg, it's not a penalty, just overturn the decision. It doesn't need him to look through it for however many minutes he did. It doesn't need him then to instruct the referee to go and look over it, because it's such an obvious error that it doesn't, yeah, it's wasting everybody's time. It should be 10 seconds. It's not a handball. I don't know what you looked at. Let's play on with a free kick or a goal kick or whatever it might have been. Really, really poor. And it's the biggest, as I mentioned, the biggest bugbear I have with the whole system is that it just takes too long. And even more frustrating, watching the Euros, if anyone else is watching it, VAR decisions are being made within 5 seconds. It's been incredible, and I didn't think it was possible. And it's a complete world away from the kind of protocol and the way that the enactment of VAR in this game.
All right, well, ultimately, all's well that ends well. But yes, speed it up, J-League, if you wouldn't mind. But for another week, that was... This Week in VAR. This Week in VAR. This Week. All right, well, just before we leave this game and wrap things up, Sam, there were a few other talking points that, I don't know, maybe are only important to me as a Tokyo supporter, but from this game in general, obviously, before kickoff, Yokohama FC acknowledged Shunsuke Nakamura, who had made his 400th J1 appearance earlier on in the month. Shunsuke was on the bench here and came on late on, and in fact set up Yokohama FC's best chance to notch an equaliser late on, when his fellow sub, Kazuma Watanabe, who jogged off the bench in the 90th minute and then planted a header just wide of the post a second later, that would have seen the Yokohama FC steal a point at home. But ultimately, yeah, Watanabe missed the target against his former team. The other couple of things I wanted to mention, the running battle between Masato Morishige and Kleber was, very interesting to watch. As you say, Sam, yeah, Kleber's early overhead kick that went backwards certainly didn't bode well for the rest of the game. But he did, he did have a running battle with Morishige that was, very interesting to keep track of. But both of them spent lots of time on the floor trying to win a free kick off their opponent. And, there was plenty of staging and play acting between the pair of them, but they did seem to get on reasonably well throughout. And, the final one was a late sub for Tokyo, with Kyosuke Tagawa coming on and wasting two late chances to ice the game for Tokyo under the watchful eye of Olympic and indeed national team manager Hajime Moriyasu. And indeed, the DAZN telecast after Tagawa's first miss, when he miskicked the ball, the camera panned straight to Moriyasu, who had quite a worried expression on his face. So I don't know if that's done any damage to Tagawa's chances of making the final Olympic 18 or not. But yes, we'll wait and see, I guess, in the coming days. I'm not actually sure when the Olympic squad is being announced. Are you any closer to that information than I am, Sam?
Yeah, if I remember rightly, I think it's 2 o'clock tomorrow.
Oh, joking. All right.
So you don't have to wait too long.
All right, then. So, yeah, by the time this podcast is posted, most likely, you will already know if Tagawa's made it or not. And, I hate things like that. there you go. That proves that I honestly didn't know. From a Tokyo perspective, I hope Tagawa's in. But you never know. Moriyasu might have been swayed by those two fairly ordinary misses. And so with that, then, obviously, Yokohama FC stay rooted to the foot of the table. And as I mentioned earlier, Tokyo moved up a spot in the table above Cerezo Osaka, who are away with the ACL. So coming up on Wednesday, then, we have six games to be played from match day 19, which is a familiar pattern. Yeah, six games this past weekend, six games on Wednesday, and again six coming up from match day 20 on Sunday. I guess, Sam, there's no question about the main event on Wednesday night, is there, when the third-placed Yokohama F. Marinos host fourth-placed Tosu at Mitsuzawa. That should be an absolute cracker.
Yeah, absolutely. Two teams playing very well this season. It's the first league game without Ange Postecoglou for Marinos, so it'll be interesting to see what sort of tweaks to the system have been made. They didn't perform very well in the Levain Cup as they went out to Sapporo, so hopefully they've been able to work on things. Tosu, they've had a bit of a break now after such a good first half of the season, so can they continue their run towards an unlikely ACL place? It should be a really fascinating game.
Most definitely. And a bit of a relegation dogfight six-pointer between the teams in 15th and 16th, with the 15th place Shimizu, who were idle this past weekend, travelling up to face Vegalta Sendai. And that should be really interesting. As Johnny said last week, and as we've mentioned here, Sendai have picked things up in recent match days, so they'll be looking for a home win at the Urtec Stadium when S-Pulse come calling. And Sam, I don't want to throw you under the bus here, but are patrons to expect another midweek written roundup from you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I quite like them. I quite enjoy the trying to get them out as quickly as possible. And yeah, there's some really good games to look forward to. So yeah, sometime Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday afternoon here, Wednesday evening your time. Yeah, I should be dropping something, and hopefully it's a decent read.
All right, terrific stuff, as it always is, Sam. Yes, I'll be standing by my email inbox and ready to post straight away up onto our Patreon website for all of our patrons to sink their teeth into. And so then on Sunday the 27th, as we said, six games from match day 20 to be played. Highlighted, I guess, Sam, should I steal your thunder here? If I was to pick a game for neutrals to watch, it would be Urawa hosting Fukuoka. Would you be looking there or anywhere else for your pick of the weekend?
It's difficult to look away from Urawa and Vispa. I think, yeah, really interesting game. Both teams coming off poor results, at least at the weekend. It's always good to watch Kasper Juncker play. So, yeah, that would be one. The other one I would look at just in terms of just as a football match is Kashima versus Sapporo. Both teams are going to go for it. Kashima, yeah, and still a little bit inconsistent, but they've got terrific players. Everaldo was back in the league this weekend. He scored a few goals throughout the cup competitions over the kind of international break. So, yeah, getting him back up to full fitness will be interesting. And Sapporo played terrifically at the weekend. So I think on paper as neutral, I mean, it's 8th versus 10th, so maybe not quite as important as you'd say maybe some other games. But just as a neutral to watch a game of football, I think that would be the one I would look into.
Yeah, all right, terrific stuff. And again, at the foot of the table, some potential six-pointers at both Yokohama FC, who host Shimizu, and also Shonan, who entertain Kashiwa. But I don't know, Sam, with the Shonan up in 13th, and as I said earlier, 7 points outside the drop zone, is one of their games, does that still qualify as a relegation six-pointer, do you think, these days, or do they have enough of breathing space for this simply to be panic stations for Kashiwa Reysol?
No, I still think it's an important game for Shonan as well, because for the teams just outside the relegation zone, it's about accumulating as many points as possible, because you know after the ACL, Gamba are coming. They've got their however many games in hand it will be at that point, and you know that you don't want to be that team that is 16th by the time that Gamba take on that run of games, and you don't want to be the team that drop in. So yeah, for teams like Shonan, Tokushima, Shimizu, Sendai, it is about getting as much of a cushion as possible and getting as high in the table before those games beneath them are played. So yeah, still I think very important for Shonan. It will be until, I mean, it's the kind of cliche in the Premier League when they play a 20-team league, but to get to that 40-point mark is what they'll be aiming for. So, yeah, I still think it's vitally important for Shonan, and it leaves some really intriguing games in that lower part of the table where every result is still really important.
Yeah, most definitely. And I guess that's the challenge now for Shonan, to build on that huge win at Reds on the weekend and really push on and, yeah, get themselves comfortably into mid-table. They'd drawn their three previous games before the weekend, and then, to hopefully kick on after that big win at Saitama Stadium. We'll wait and see with a desperate-looking Kashiwa side fronting up. They will fancy their chances, Belmari, but as Belmari supporters know, when that's the case, they're often falling flat on their face, aren't they? So we'll wait and see. A couple of big match days to come before our next episode then. Although, as with this weekend, with just the six games from each match day to be played, obviously, with the ACL teams not involved. So with all that done then, Sam, well, yeah, we've not quite managed an hour and a half, but just over an hour. I think all of our listeners will be satisfied with that, a thorough roundup of the weekend's action and a look ahead to what's to come. So, we'll look forward to reading you, or at least our patrons will, on Wednesday night, and then, reconvening next week to chat about what's going on.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I look forward to speaking to you next week when we can begin our marathon again with the ACL, but kind of bumping that off towards an hour and a half or a two-hour podcast.
Yes, yep, sounds like a plan to me. All right, well, that is it then for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. And, of course, as always, we'd like to thank you listeners for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up the week in J1. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J Talk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.